Antler Queens. I'm Cher McAnally, head of entertainment at Tumblr, and the wilderness speaks to me.
And I'm Lauren Shippen, professional writer who has never eaten another human being.
And this is Dashboard Diaries, a podcast for you, the folks who are in this internet bunker with us. We talk about what's going on our favorite hell site, get into what we like to call Tumblr lore, do fandom deep dives, and share the times when we've gone feral over a new ship. So, Lauren, what has your last week on Tumblr been like?
I feel like it has been finale central over the last, especially the last like four or 5 days. We're recording this on Wednesday. It'll come out on Friday. Yep. And between Succession, Barry, and Ted Lasso, we're really actually not even in season finale realm, but in series finale realm. Because obviously the finale of Yellowjackets, which we're talking about today, was last Friday. But then both Barry and Succession ended on Sunday. And my dash has basically just been reactions to Succession and Barry for the past 2 days, like straight. And now today I'm starting to get the Ted Lasso finale reactions. So it's been like a lot of very, very complicated feelings that I think, you know, a lot of people I follow share and a lot of people on Tumblr share, which is that the general consensus and the feeling that I have is that the Succession and the Barry finales were perfect. And they were also like so hard to watch. Like, I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody who's not caught up, but it was just like those both of those shows are dark comedy tragedies, right? Like, that's what they are. And they ended the way that they only could ever end. And it was so well executed. And also, like, after that double whammy on Sunday night, I was just like, I need to stare at the wall for a while.
Yeah, it's hard to put into words. That was, what a finale. That was a lot. It was, oh my gosh. I kept checking the time to make sure, I just didn't want it to end. I kept being like, how much longer is in this episode? Like, it's so, just every scene was so intense and just so good. Like, what a just, I mean, I would put this finale up there with like the Sopranos finale.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
Okay, and please take this with a grain of salt, because I will admit, in this moment, I have never watched Sopranos. I have just heard so much about the finale.
Yeah, I was like, I'll believe you, because I've never watched the Sopranos either.
Yeah, look, people have like in-depth explained the finale to me, like, and then it all goes dark and you don't even know. So I feel like I was there. Yeah. And I've watched like 3 episodes of Sopranos, so I get the overall like vibe.
It's
so,
in the cultural consciousness for sure.
I think, yeah. So I can judge, I can compare the Sopranos finale to the Succession finale. I'm an expert now. I was going to ask you how you felt about the Barry finale, because I actually stopped watching Barry a few episodes ago, because when they did the flash forward, it just got so painfully bleak for me that I was like, I need to take a step back, and I haven't finished it. And I'm going to finish it. I've watched every episode of Barry. I'm going to finish the show. I'm not a quitter, I don't think. But it's so intense.
It's so intense. And I like had a long conversation with my partner about this season in particular after the finale. And just the fact that, like, for the most part, the last like few episodes, or at least there was at least a scene in like the sort of the back half of the season of each season of Barry that has like a big sort of action set piece. Like, whether it's the chase in season 3 or Barry going through the gang, you know, hide out in season 1 and killing everybody. Like, there's always sort of like a big thing. And this season doesn't really have that in the same way. And I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And yet the finale felt like that. Like, it evoked the same emotion of like watching a tense action sequence, but the action actually was all like very, very quick. Like, there was action, but it happened very quickly. Everything in the episode happened very quickly. And it was unbelievably bleak, but like also not bleak in like a we are sort of indulging in misery. Like, I think some bleak content can kind of like indulge in misery in a not productive way, but I think what's so great about Barry is that it's still always like saying something. And I will say this without spoiling anything, and I mean this as the highest compliment I can give, but the like second to last shot in the Barry finale, I literally said out loud, "Are you fucking kidding me?" Because they do something that's just like so outlandish and so, it makes perfect sense. It's like the perfect conclusion to the story that we've watched. But it was also just like, oh my God, I can't believe we're here. So once you watch the rest of the season, if you do watch the rest of the season, I'm very excited to hear what you think. And I think the other thing, too, that was really interesting about the Barry finale, especially compared to the Succession and Ted Lasso's finales, is that both Succession and Ted Lasso were like an hour 15. And those shows are usually around an hour anyway. But like Barry, it's like 33 minutes, like it always is. It was just like, we're in, we're out. You're going to see, we're going to conclude 900 character stories really quick. Like, there's an economy to that show that I just find astounding. So Bill Hader, I am worshiping at your feet. But anyway, how was your last week on Tumblr?
I mean, I think we were having a very similar week on Tumblr, very enmeshed in the Succession discourse. Was really enjoying watching along as, you know, that kind of unfolded post-finale. I didn't watch it Sunday night, so it was like great to kind of watch it Sunday morning and then like, or Monday morning and then kind of like scroll. I saw a post that, gosh, what's Roman wears a shirt in one of the scenes of the Succession finale when he's like at his mom's, you know, Bahamas house or where they are. And it's like, just like a children's like stripy shirt from Walmart, and people found it and it's like $13 at Walmart. It has since sold out.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, I love that Tumblr teaches me a new thing every day. And so, yeah, really. And then also just Yellow Jackets, man. Which I know we're gonna dive into that this episode, but wow.
Well, I mean, should we just go right into Yellow Jackets and do the rest of our stuff after?
Yes.
Switch things up?
Yeah, let's.
Should we do that?
Yeah, we're diving in. Okay. Let's crash right into the forest of Yellow Jackets, you know what I mean? So Lauren, as you watch Yellow Jackets, but you're not caught up, right? Or you have not seen it at all?
No, I'm now fully.
Oh, you're fully caught up. Yes, oh, I've seen incredible. It. Oh my gosh. Yes. Okay. So
yeah. So this is a spoiler zone.
We have entered.
If you haven't watched Yellow Jackets and you want to,
the spoiler Thunderdome here. I'm excited. All right. So
yes.
First question: what were your thoughts on the finale?
Yeah, I thought like it felt like the natural conclusion to like everything that they've been doing this season. Like, we knew that it was going to end in a major character's death. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I saw Natalie being the person who dies. It's like, I don't know if I saw that coming. Like, I thought maybe it would be Lottie. I wasn't totally sure. But the thing that like truly shocked me was Coach Ben.
Okay.
Like,
I was
tell me what you think about that whole thing.
I was typing up the other questions I was thinking of as you were talking, and I was literally just typing in all caps, Coach Ben in his villain era. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, tell me everything. Do you think that he lit the cabin on fire, first of all?
I'm conflicted about it. I think the overall consensus in the fandom, at least from what I have seen, is yes, he lit the cabin on fire. I have seen some people thinking, oh no, he didn't light the cabin on fire. That's what they want you to think. The wilderness set the cabin on fire.
No.
And people were asking, you know, I saw one comment that said, you know, Ben was just trying to go to the cabin to get, you know, to get rope to create a rope ladder and matches to start a fire, and now you are all accusing him of arson. But that moment when he looked through the window and he saw everyone kind of doing that ritual with Natalie as the antler queen, where Natalie was the one person who he thought still had like some shred of humanity, I think he just broke.
Yeah.
I think he did. And yeah. I think you make irrational decisions when you are starving and, you know, your soccer team that you once coached are now, you know, cannibalistic. It just, you know, yeah. I don't know what I would have done. You know what I mean? What do you think?
I mean, I think he did it. Also, this might be an unpopular opinion. I don't think he's totally crazy for doing that.
I don't think it's awful, either.
Right? Like, I think it's terrible. Like, yeah. they are children, and he is, like, the one adult in the room. And he, I think, generally has not been stepping up as, like, the adult in the room. Obviously, you know, he is, you know, down a leg. He experienced, like, a great, you know, physical trauma compared to some of the other folks. But, like, yeah, he's just sort of generally been fairly passive in a situation in which he should be stepping up. But at the same time, like, I think moving from we're eating people who have died, which, like,
mm-hmm.
There's a podcast called You're Wrong About that does some great sort of arcs of episodes about like the Donner Party and about the boys rugby team that crashed in the Andes in like the 70s mm-hmm. that Yellow Jackets is like kind of inspired by, and where they talk about, you know, like the cannibalism that happened in those situations. And I think, you know, the broad understanding is that, like, yeah, if you're in that situation and like some, you know, with Jackie who died of exposure, like mm-hmm. eating that person is not some sort of unforgivable sin, right? Like it doesn't make yeah. you a bad person. It's like that person's already dead. Like it might be unsafe because, I mean, you know, prion disease exists, and if you eat the wrong part of your own species, you can get mad cow disease, basically.
Yeah.
But when you move from that to we are now actively hunting our fellow people and you know, putting them to death, I think, I don't know, I think Ben maybe has some rights in this regard.
Yeah, like, I mean, I feel like he must have thought it's us or them. It's right. me or them, you know, at this yeah. point, because
yeah.
he's now escaped. He's found his little hidey hole, but he kind of hinted to Natalie that it's somewhere. He doesn't know, but Javi led her part of the way there, and right. they're hunters. They could eventually find him. They're a big group. So I'm sure that's yeah. what was going through his head, and him thinking, well,
yeah.
they're going to find me and eat me, I guess, or
I'm yeah. like, and I guess I should say, like, I don't, you know, I don't think that what Ben did was necessarily, like, justified or good, but I don't think it's any different from
yeah.
what the girls are doing, right? Like, in some ways, I think it's slightly, like, less sadistic. Like, the way in which they, I mean, I also love that, like, I'm very curious what you think about the sort of the ritual that they did to pick the person to hunt, because like mm-hmm. I actually love that we didn't get to see that process, that we just like jumped into them doing it. We don't get to see like how they come to this conclusion. Like, what did you think
yeah.
of that?
I liked it. I think it was very much, you know, this is the way that they've been doing. They've been deciding things already, right? You know, mm-hmm. the chores are decided with the card. And I also think it's really interesting that Javi was the one who brought the queen card back.
Connected that.
It's like a throwaway line. I have closed captions on, so I don't even know how loud it actually was. But there's a line like in the episode after Javi is found in season 2 where Ty asks him, "Where did you find this queen card?" Mm. And like, so he found it.
He
found the card that ultimately led to his demise, but also like the way that they picked the cards. Yeah, I found really interesting and kind of just, oh yeah, okay, this is how we've been doing chores. This is how we'll pick the person we cannibalize. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was just, yeah, duh, that's how you do it. I also think it's interesting that they were willing to kill Nat when she's the one person who can track and hunt, but you know, I right. guess from their POV, she hadn't been succeeding in hunting, but it's also the depths of winter and she had gotten them game before. So I don't, you know, it's just, it is wild to think that they just went from, you know, Lottie needs to eat to we're going to eat someone. And also yeah. Coach Ben was gone for like, what, 2 hours, 3 hours?
Yeah.
He goes on a little field trip. He comes back and they've killed Javi. They've hunted and killed Javi.
It's complete anarchy.
Nat and right, and the thing is, he probably came back. I think like he what it okay. What's your POV? He came back to just tell Nat, "Hey, let's get the hell out of here," or he came back to say like, "I've saved us all."
I think he came back to neither. I think he came back to like get supplies, right? Like he found this, mm-hmm. he found this place, and he was like, "I can't just survive. Like I need stuff. I need matches. I need, you know,
yeah.
stuff to survive." And then I think he saw Nat and was like, you know what? She's had a level head this whole time. Like, if there's one person I'm going to save, it should be her. And yeah. so he gave her that chance. And like, you know, it's like if that had happened, if somehow, you know, Javi hadn't died by that point, like who knows what Nat would have chosen to do? Maybe she would have left. Like, because I think that she was, up until she let Javi die, I think that she was very much like, everyone else has lost their goddamn minds.
Yeah.
and like, I mean, I'm the one sane person here.
Well, and I also think it really frustrated me the way that she framed Javi's death to Coach Ben when he said, you know, you're not like these girls. And she said, no, I'm worse. You know, I was supposed to die and I let him die in my place. What she should have said was, they were hunting me. Javi fell through the ice and I let Javi die in my place because he fell through the ice. And it was, you know, and also the thing is, you fall through the ice, you probably get hope. The amount of time he was in there, he probably would have died anyway.
Almost certainly. Point. Yeah.
So.
And no, I mean, I totally agree.
I feel like if she'd said that to him, Coach Ben would have been like, well, that's fucked up, but that's not your fault. Like.
Yeah. But I think that just like, I think it makes so much sense for Nat's character, right? It's like she, and like, you know, I think that that's why she also was the one to die at the end of all of it, right? It's like she's been carrying around this guilt. Like she felt like everything was her responsibility and, you know, she didn't want to be responsible for someone dying because of her own passivity, right? Like,
yeah,
which I think is very, very tragic. And I have seen some, you know, some fan reactions on Tumblr that people are pretty disappointed with Natalie's death and the fact that, like, she was going on this healing journey and, you know, then sort of got that healing journey taken away from her by dying, and that it was, like, not what that character deserved. I think I have a slightly different perspective on her healing journey, and I'm curious to hear what you think.
Okay.
Because, like, when she went to Lottie's, when she was kidnapped and, you know, ended up at Lottie's and, like, you know, spending time there and everything, the, like, change of heart that she had and the sort of the change in mood and perspective happened so quickly that I was like, this woman is not healing. She is actively repressing stuff. She has decided to detach herself from reality. Not to say that that's like she deserved to die or anything. None of them deserve to die. But like, I don't think that actually she was on her way to healing. I think that she was falling into Lottie's delusion in the same way that she did in the past. And we see her do that in the past. And so like, I don't know what your perspective on that is.
I mean, honestly, my perspective was kind of her. She changed so much, so dramatically, even in her demeanor and her body language, that I thought she was being drugged. I was Lottie is drugging her because what's
going on?
So I do kind of, it is interesting that maybe like, and I did see some commentary say, you know, this is a space that Nat has been in before, right? She's been to rehab. She has been in retreat spaces where you do introspection and, you know, you kind of work through things. So she just snapped right back into that routine and that place mentally.
That's
which is also,
point.
You know, an interesting perspective I've seen. It does bum me out that her death was ruled as a drug overdose and she was sober and her struggle had been drug addiction. I really wish she died in a different way or it hadn't been ruled a drug overdose because I just felt like that was kind of a slap in the face to her character.
Totally. Yeah, I completely. I think that, like, it makes sense from a dramatic irony standpoint, but it still sucks, right? It's like, because she had, you know, gotten sober and.
I know that Yellow Jackets isn't the most realistic show in the world, so maybe I'm being nitpicky here. But once Misty realized who she was accidentally stabbing, which I think she did kind of instantaneously as soon as it. Why would she press down on the syringe? Because you need to do that to, like, do a full dose. And even if she'd started pressing, why didn't she stop? You know, like, I've used a syringe
that's
before.
A good
like,
point.
I think they take, there's, like, a little give there.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah. Right?
Huh.
I don't know. Just questions.
I don't
questions
know.
For the show.
Food for thought. Well, and speaking of, I guess, like, realism, I think, you know, one of the things that Yellow Jackets has been toying with for its two seasons is, like, the idea of the supernatural, right? And I think, like, I've seen a lot of reactions from fans, specifically, like, in reblogs of the gift set of Shauna and Lottie, like, as adults at the end when Shauna is like, there was no wilderness, it was always us, and Lottie saying, isn't that the same thing? And that sort of being, like, the thesis of the show. And I do think that it's the thesis of the show. However, do you think that there's still something supernatural going on, or is it just, like, all mass delusion kind of thing?
I mean, I'll say I just love shows that have a supernatural element of some sort. I want there to be something supernatural to be going on. I don't think there is. I do think it's a shared delusion and that it's just a lot of coincidence. But the fact that a bear just walked into their camp is wild to me. Like, yeah. Things like that happening are wild to me. But again, could that be part of a shared delusion of some sort? Because we've seen moments where you're convinced it's reality, like, you know, like Aquila's mouse. And then you find out the mouse was never alive and hadn't been alive since like probably the 80s. It was completely mummified, you know? Yes. So all these scenes where it's, you know, you think Aquila completely has it together. No, she's been... So maybe they found a dead bear. Maybe something else happened, you know? Maybe it didn't just stroll into camp and walk right up to Lottie. You know, maybe that's what they all decided happened.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And I think you're right. Like, I do think that probably there's nothing supernatural going on. And I think most things can be explained. Like, I think even Thaisa's, like, you know, sort of dream self and stuff, like, that can just be explained through, like, you know, an untreated mental illness, right?
Yeah, however, exactly.
The symbol, right? Like, what's the deal with the symbol?
The symbol. Oh, my gosh.
That's, like, the one, like, loose thread that I'm like, when is this going to be explained?
It really, like, and the symbol is on the tree that has, you know, the moss that Coach Ben goes into. And the symbol is there right at the crash site, right where they land. And I do think the symbol is a map. Like, that's the symbol is a map of, like, the land that they're in. I've seen some people say that the symbol is, because the symbol is on all of those points, you know, throughout, like, and it is a map. It isn't a map, but like a ritual, and it's trapped the darkness within that space.
Mm.
And that's what the symbol is. I don't know. What do you think? What's your POV on the symbol and on the kind of, you know, what we might see happen next in the next season?
Yeah. I mean, I think the symbol being a map makes a lot of sense. I think the idea of it being like, some sort of like pentagram capturing the demon makes a lot of sense too. I think I think even, you know, Thaisa finding the symbols in her sleep, obviously that could just be explained by like, you know, our brains attached to patterns and also notice things subconsciously that we don't notice consciously. But also, I would not be surprised if we got a reveal in the next season that Thaisa is actually carving the symbols, right? Like, that would make sense to me. The thing that I'm like, what is the origin point about is the fact that the symbols have been there from the beginning and they were at the crash site and they, you know, are in all of these places. And so it's like, I want to know, is it that the guy who lived in the cabin before was like carving them? Has this happened before with another group of people? Like, and that's something that I am actually not sure the show is ever going to answer, because I don't think narratively they have to, but I still want to know.
I really am so interested in the, like, in what the symbol is. And I want more of what it is. I do wish they were maybe a little faster with dropping kind of crumbs about, like, breadcrumbs about it. Because I think we knew it was a map by the end of, like, the first season, right? So what new kind of information have we found? But I do think, like, especially Ty's kind of dark or second, you know, shadow self or whatever you might call it. The fact that this... you know, man with no eyes who her grandmother saw, she now sees and leads her to the symbol quite far from where they are. But also we know that they, you know, they go to that ledge already. So if she's near that, like, she could have carved the symbol. She could have seen it that one place that one time. Maybe it's in a tree and then she carves it. But also the fact that the symbol, the places that the symbol are also build, like, create the symbol. It just...
Yes.
I think it was Cabin Daddy.
His crew. It must have been. Yeah.
And there's got to be some kind of, like, underground tunnels, right? Because Lottie keeps hallucinating those or seeing them in her dreams, you know?
Oh, when
you're
right.
When she was electrocuted at the beginning of the first episode, she sees herself walking in that tunnel with the, you know, with, like, by candlelight.
Candles, yeah. That's right. Huh. So we already know that Yellow Jackets is getting a season 3.
Yes.
What are, like, some hopes, wishes, predictions that you have for season 3?
I predict that we will have another wilderness survivor show up. I don't know who it is. A lot of people think it's Mari, because if there's someone did some, like, frame by frame analysis of season 2, episode 1, when you see the survivors getting on the plane. And there is a teammate, there's one of the girls who has her hood down and she's looking down, and they compared their, like, the bottom of her face to Mari's face, and it looks like it could be Mari. I've also seen speculation, though, that Mari is Pit Girl. But Pit Girl could also be Jen, who is another kind of JV character. I think Mari is varsity, but so it would be, interesting. And I also think Coach Ben survives. I am split between the theory that Coach Ben is going to be the big bad in the past and the present. Or that Coach Ben didn't get rescued with them and he's still out there in the wilderness. And so these are some of my little predictions. And I think, you know, at some point they have to break up right into, like, the warring clans, right? Mm-hmm. So I wonder how they're going to, like, if they're all going to live together under the same roof, you know, potentially in the plane, but still be at war, because where else is there to live? It's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah. And I do think Antler Queen is a rotating role. Like, there is going to be multiple Antler Queens. What are your kind of thoughts and predictions and hopes for season 3 and beyond?
I love that. I love the idea of Ben still being out there, because, of course, like, if he hides from them the whole time, then, like, he wouldn't know that they were rescued necessarily. Yeah, I mean, I wonder, too, if we might eventually see the present day, the adult girls, go back to the same spot. You know, like somehow, like, charter a plane and get back there and sort of, like, return to where it all happened.
That is, like a natural next step.
Yeah.
Especially because I would say Lottie's kind of cult wilderness retreat. First off, the symbol is there, you know, when you go up,
exactly.
Pan out aerial view. So it's kind of like that was the first step. Like, season 1, they reconnect. Second 2... they do the hunt in a wilderness, you know, at some kind of space. And I do think, season 3, they're going to go back. I think season 3, they're going to go back late in the season. I think season 4 is when they are going to still be back there. And season 5, when they will return to humanity and, like, resolution.
Yes, that makes perfect sense to me. Because also, like, we have so much, there's so much story to explore in the past, right? Especially now that the cabin has burned down. We have to see, Natalie's the Antler Queen. We have to see the hunt. We have to find out who Pit Girl is. We have to find them, find new shelter, deal with Ben in whatever way that needs to be dealt with. But I don't know what the present day plot is, right? Because it's like, Adam's murder has been resolved. Travis's death has been resolved. Obviously, there's going to be the emotional fallout of Natalie's death, but, like, and there's still, you know, Thaisa's whole deal to deal with, but they don't, like, what is going to be the next thing sort of for them as a group to confront? And I'm really curious, is it going to be that, like, Ben somehow shows up? Like, it feels like there's going to be, going to be another wilderness survivor, but it's going to be something that they, like, maybe someone they thought was dead or something.
Yeah, I think there's got to be that trigger that brings them back to the wilderness.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what that is. I think season, 3 will definitely open with them reeling, in the future, reeling from the, from Natalie's death. I think Van is going to find out that she's in remission from cancer. And I think that is, because the wilderness got what it wanted. I do think that's why she was so all in on doing the ritual again. And I think, in the past, we're going to see them kind of figuring out how to get shelter. I think, it's definitely going to be the plane, because we see in episode, when they're walking away from, in the morning after their, nighttime cannibal feast around the fire, they're walking away. And when they pan up, you can see the wreckage of the plane. So it's, nearby where they're doing their little cannibaling. So
that makes sense.
I rewatched the show a lot.
I was going to say, like, you're picking up on details that I have not picked up on. I love it.
Having a lot of fun watching it. Do you have any personal favorite Tumblr takes or Tumblr posts that you saw? Because there's just been just some real excellent content coming out of the season finale.
I mean, I have loved all of the Ben memes, and we'll be sure to you know, reblog a bunch of those to dashboarddiaries.tumblr.com. Mm-hmm. But beyond the Ben memes, I haven't seen any, like, any of the sort of big predictions that, like, you just made. So I'm curious what your favorite Tumblr takes have been.
Oh, my favorite Tumblr takes have been less predictions and more, yeah, like, memes and posts. Like, no, like, real in-depth, like, things. Like, what I've been really latching on to, as much as I definitely have been reading all of that, and thank you all for your insights. My favorite post that I think I saw was the fact that the cast threw an actual funeral for Javi. Did you see this?
No.
Wait, I'll show you. Oh, my gosh. And we will reblog it, too. Dashboard Diaries.
Oh my god, this is so cute.
Right? Isn't it?
They're like actually dressed in black around one of those, yeah, like memorial photos.
The signed
of Javi.
Memorial photo. Oh,
that
my
is
gosh.
So cute. Oh my god. Well, because also, of course, I mean, you know, when somebody dies on the show, you lose that cast member, and that's always sad,
yeah,
right? So you don't get to hang out with your pal, like, anymore.
Exactly. Like, I would, yeah, I love that they cute. Did, like, a little special funeral and send off. And I also just sent you another one of my favorites, which is a image. It's like in the format of the live slug reaction meme, but it's live Coach Ben reaction, and it's Coach Ben outside of the window watching Nat become Antler Queen.
It's so good. My, oh my god, I love it. Yes, I will be liking and reblogging this.
And then this is one of my just favorite Yellow Jackets posts overall. It's a season one post, but always relevant. So this post is from Neon Envy, and it says, "Diversity win. The woman crouched outside your window eating dirt is a lesbian."
So applicable. So great.
I love it. I love that. So yeah, really living for all of the Yellow Jackets memes and content. What a show.
What a show.
Please quadruple all writers' salaries so that we can get all our shows back. Thank you.
Yes.
Very much.
Please. So before, yes, we move on to our ad break and then the rest of our stuff, I do have a tiny little quiz for you. Because, ooh, one of the episodes this season was titled Two Truths and a Lie, which is a classic game and one that was, yes, played in the episode. And so I have a Two Truths and a Lie for you about the insect Yellow Jackets. So, ooh, I'm gonna say three statements to you, and you're going to tell me which one is a lie. Yellow Jackets die when they sting. Some Yellow Jackets build nests underground. Yellow Jackets eat other insects. So which one of those is not true?
Yellow Jackets do not die when they sting.
You are correct.
They can sting you as many times as you want, as they want. If they want to sting you, yep, three times on one finger when you're 5 years old, they can do that. Not that that has
I see
happened
that
to me.
Maybe we're unlocking some more share backstory, injury backstory. But yeah, I mean, I think thematically, Yellow Jackets are a great, you know, insect to choose for this team because they will sting you multiple times. Yeah. They eat other human beings in the way that Yellow Jackets eat other insects. So I'm curious if, you know, if they try to build a shelter underground. Ooh. Who knows?
Interesting.
Because some Yellow Jackets do that. Coach Ben.
Coach Ben does
true.
Kind of have that underground situation. Yeah. And they do have their pit, but I guess that's not fully underground. Them losing the cabin is going to just accelerate their descent into, you know,
completely
complete ridiculousness. I don't even just chaos, absolute,
yeah,
lawless chaos. And speaking of, you know, things underground, digging into our archives, should we go on into our dashboard confessionals?
Let's do it. So this week I have a post that I reblogged on May 30th, 2016. So almost exactly 6 years ago. Nope, sorry, 7 years ago. It's 2023. I knew that. And it is one of my favorite videos on Tumblr. It begins with a guy on a skateboard who then jumps onto a railing that then goes into a body of water, which is like extreme Vine energy, right? Like that was something that was very like common at the time. But then he bursts up from the water and has a massive fish in his hands. And it's just, It's absurd. It's hilarious. It's a great great example of the structure of storytelling. You know, you set up a premise, man skating on a railing, then you introduce a conflict. He's about to go into a body of water, and then you have a twist. He comes out of the body of water holding a live fish. So just a masterpiece. Beautiful. Through and through. Cher, what do you have from the archives?
I have a really special post, some nice nostalgia here. I posted this or reblogged this on May 30th, 2015. So 8 years ago? Yes. And it's from Keep My Whiskey Neat. And it is a photo of, if you are over 20, you may remember, 3D Doritos. A classic, excellent snack. One of my favorite childhood snacks. And the caption says, "I can't stop thinking about the one that got away. Even though I haven't seen you in years, there will always be a soft spot in my heart for you. I love you and miss you and hope that wherever you are genuinely happy. We miss you, 3D Doritos."
A, I love this post. And B, I genuinely forgot all about 3D Doritos. What a time. That time in like the late 90s, early 2000s, where they were just doing just crazy stuff with food, the purple, like, ketchup. It was all wild.
I was just about to say, yeah, the colorful ketchup and the colorful butter. Cheetos used to turn your tongue green. Remember that?
Yeah, what was going on? What happened?
I'm convinced for that one that they made a batch of Cheetos and they turned the testers' tongues green and they were like, you know what? We can use this to our advantage.
We can market this to weird kids.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. What a time.
So we have a mailbag today. We have a listener email from a German listener, Pia, who wanted to share their perspective on Eurovision as a German viewer. And there were lots of great insights in this email. Basically, Pia explains that Germany is so used to coming last or second to last that it's just become this perpetual joke amongst German Eurovision fans. And that, you know, they thought maybe this year they might have a chance, given that Lord of the Lost, the band that was representing Germany, felt like a little bit more Eurovision-y. But sadly, they still came in last, apparently. But the thing that I really enjoyed about this email, especially, was that Pia shared some ideas that German fans on Tumblr have been having around how Germany can improve their chances in future. So I'm just going to read through some of these examples. So when Germany came in last again, there were some hilarious Tumblr posts going around suggesting Germany should just go rogue next year, like letting a random security guard sing, off-yodeling, etc. The funniest one, in my opinion, is one in German that suggested a very elaborate plan for next year. And Pia sent through this post, which we'll reblog, but it is all in German. So Pia thankfully sort of shortened and explained it to me. I will shorten it a bit here, but it included letting the longtime German ESC commentator Peter Urban choose a group of toddlers at random who will proceed to compose a song. This song will be given to a random marching band, not toddlers, from a small town, but only a few minutes before the performance. During the performance, rules from an elected German allotment garden club, love the specificity there, will be recited by the small town's local Schützenkönig. A Schützenkönig, something like King of the Marksmen in English, is someone who wins a marksman competition at a traditional German festival held annually by a lot of German towns. So there's a lot to love about that summary. Wow. Of this German Tumblr post.
Look, I'm in for that show.
Right? I would happily watch a marching band play a piece they just learned that was composed by toddlers. And I really like these details that, you know, German allotment garden club, I guess, is a thing. And they have rules enough that this would be something that makes sense to you know, fellow German citizens. And the fact that they have marksman competitions in small German towns and that they have a name for the winner of those marksman competitions is just like really delightful. Wow. Germany, what a wonderful country. Thank you, Pia, for sharing your perspective on Eurovision. We love to see it. And Cher, I think you have some Eurovision updates more generally for our listeners.
I absolutely do. So in the month of May, there were 1 million, a little over 1 million notes on posts tagged Eurovision. And so again, these metrics that I have right now are only on content tagged with Eurovision. A lot of the time, right, people will post things and not tag them. So I will say that this is likely significantly larger. But 1 million notes on Eurovision content, and 333,000 searches for Eurovision on Tumblr in the month of May.
Jeez Louise.
And the vast, vast majority of that, over 90% of those numbers, were the weekend of Eurovision. So just, you know, that was pretty much what was going on Tumblr in those 48 hours, which we love.
I love it. That's amazing.
I thought Lord of the Lost performance was great. And they did not deserve to Lord of the Lose Eurovision.
God, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Intense, ridiculous, fun, heavy metal performance. It was out there. It was energetic. I thought it deserved top five.
Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Germany, I hope next year you fare a little bit better.
Yeah. We're looking forward to seeing your toddler composed small town marching band performed marksman singer show.
That'll be great. That'll
be great. What's got you in your feels this week, Lauren?
Well, I have a resurgence of an old and long-held fandom of mine, which is always such a fun thing, you know, and which happened in the way that it often does, which is semi-spontaneously. So I live in Seattle, and a local theater that is in the neighborhood that I live in was doing, or is currently doing, a PG Boathouse play. They've put on Jeeves Takes a Bow. And I've been a huge Jeeves and Worcester fan for my entire life. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to go and support this local theater, and I'm going to go see this play. And I did, and it was delightful. And it's gotten me just back into my Jeeves and Worcester feelings. So for those who maybe have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm not entirely sure how niche this fandom is. But if you remember a time when there was a website called Ask Jeeves, this is usually how I explain Jeeves and Worcester to people. So Ask Jeeves was a search engine back when there were more than just, you know, two search engines. And the character of Jeeves, of this butler, you know, who was very, very helpful, comes from a series of short stories and books by British author P.G. Wodehouse that sort of encompasses the Jeeves and Worcester adventures. Jeeves is this butler who's a valet, which is a little bit different than a butler, I think. I don't know. It's English aristocracy stuff from the early, you know, 20th century. Who knows? And Bertie Wooster is his charge, essentially. I mean, technically his employer, but he mostly just takes care of Bertie. He's sort of the one in charge. And they just get into hijinks. It's all like 1920s, 30s, London and England and New York. And my grandfather was a big P.G. Wodehouse fan and introduced me to the books when I was a child. And then for Christmas one year, I received the DVD box set of the entire Jeeves and Worcester BBC series from the early 90s, which stars real-life best friends Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry. And it is delightful. You can see some of it on YouTube, but is otherwise not on streaming anywhere. And so I have just been rereading, I've been reading some of the books of P.G. Wodehouse that I haven't read before. And I've just, you know, been getting really in my feelings about the fact that it can be, you know, 20 years since you first got into a fandom and you cannot think about it for several years. And then something happens and it pops back into your life and brings you joy again. So that's what's gotten me in my feels. How about you, Cher?
Love that. I also did not know that Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry are best friends, and I love that little tidbit of information.
Oh, yeah. They have a sketch show called A Bit of Fry and Laurie, which used to be on Netflix like years and years ago. I don't think it's anywhere now, but if you can find it, it is not always good, but it's really fun because it's like, it's them, like they met, I think, in college and became best friends and then started writing and doing sketch together, and this was their like first sketch show, and it's just delightful. And but yeah, Jeeves and Worcester is really their like the pinnacle of their output, in my opinion, as a pair, not as individual actors. They're both have done many phenomenal things.
Yeah. Oh, love that. I'll have to find it.
Yeah.
And for my feels this week, I mean, Yellow Jackets, which I feel like I just talked about for perhaps an hour, so we'll skip that one. And Succession, which again we touched on, definitely have a lot of feelings about that show ending. So I have two things. One is I've been watching this show called From. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's an Epix show, or like an MGM Plus show. And I found it because I was looking for things to fill the void in my life left by Yellow Jackets.
Yeah.
And yeah. And this was one of the things that came up as related. And so the plot of the show is essentially this family is driving on a road trip, and they drive into this town, and they keep driving, and they can't seem to leave the town. They keep just coming back around to the town. There's just no escape from it. And so they, you know, have to stay in this town. And it turns out this town is comprised entirely of people who are in the same exact situation all over the country, all over the United States. So we don't know where this town is, if it's a pocket universe, what is it? And at night, like evil kind of monsters come out. So you have to be in your home at night. And so it's kind of interesting. Awesome. It's very interesting, like kind of horror. It's kind of like that show, The Society, if you ever watched it, which was on Netflix. It was only did one season. Mm-hmm. It was really good. One of those shows that we lost due to, you know, season two was supposed to be filmed during COVID. So it just ended up not happening because the cast, you know, did great things. But I've really been enjoying From. It is very, it's a lot scarier than I can usually, my threshold. Like Yellow Jackets is scary, but From just is like full on horror. Like it really, it's like I've had to like, okay. If it gets too scary, I leave the room, but keep it playing so I can kind of know what's happening. but I've been enjoying it.
It's a good system.
Yeah, right. And then the other thing that has me in my feels is a show called Feel Good. Have I ever talked about this? I can't remember because we've been doing the show for a while. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. It's lovely. If you haven't watched it, it's a Netflix kind of like dramedy, I would say. There are two seasons on Netflix, and it's the story of a comedian who is living in London and kind of navigating their sexuality, their gender, sobriety, love and relationships, their relationship with their parents. And it's just like such a really, like, it's a really sweet, tender show. The lead and like the person who created the show is named Mae Martin. They're a great comedian. They also just had a really great special that just came out on Netflix that I absolutely loved. And you haven't watched it. If you haven't watched it, please do. That had me in my feels because it's a funny special, but also it really just kind of, they talk a lot about gender exploration and just kind of figuring yourself out. And it's like, it's just a really beautiful, cute special as well. And Mae Martin is on the current season of Taskmaster season 15. So I've been really enjoying watching one of my favorite comedians on Taskmaster as well. So that Mae Martin just overall has me in my feels. Love them.
I love that. That's amazing.
And with that, I'm Cher McAnally, and you can find me at overshares.tumblr.com.
And I'm Lauren Chippen, and you can find me at thelaurenchippen.tumblr.com.
This has been Dashboard Diaries, and
may your anons always be loving,
your dash always refreshed,
your gifts always be loading,
and your ships always canon.
May the fixer reading always be finished,
and the answers you seek always in the reblogs.
Thanks for scrolling with us.